Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, well, you know, we say one band at a time, and every time we don't do a band, we do a single artist, I say, well, this time it's not a band, and this time it's not a band. But that's our slogan, and we're sticking with it. But this time it is not a band. It is a singer and a songwriter, a guy who you know... listeners know from a string of just amazing singles. They might not even realize that all the singles that they know are by this person. And that person is Sam Cooke.
With an E.
With an E. Sam Cooke. No, he's not Sam Cooke. Prior to going into this, were there songs that you recognize, you say, oh, I didn't know this was him?
There are versions of songs. I'll bring it up a little bit later about some of the trends, but there are versions of things, and I'm like, oh, that's his version? So,
gotcha. Oh, I'm very interested to hear about that. But I mean, the classic stuff like You Send Me and Cupid and Twisting the Night Away and stuff like that.
I knew those songs. I don't know if I was aware, if it even paid attention to who had done them. They were just songs that existed. Wonderful songs that existed.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, then let's get into it. Singer-songwriter Sam Cooke was born on January 22nd, 1931. He died on December 11th, 1964. He's known commonly as the King of Soul, also heard him called Mr. Soul. He's influential as both a singer and a composer. He started singing as a child, and then that led to a solo career that produced a long string of hits. We'll talk about all those. And he's considered a pioneer in modern soul music.
One of the cool things about his career is how he evolved as a performer, evolved as a businessman, the whole bit. And we'll go into that some, but the evolution of this guy is really kind of insane and cool, especially considering the period of time in which he was working.
Right. Well, the fact that he started out as a gospel singer, mm-hmm. Like his first few songs that were released, I don't even know if it was like an album that he was released, but like the first few songs that were released were all gospel songs. And there's even a compilation out there called The Two Sides of Sam Cooke, and it's mm-hmm. a mix of his gospel music and his classic hits. And I love that. I don't want to say dichotomy, but it does feel like it's something that could be in conflict with each other.
And
right?
we'll talk about that some too, coming down.
We will. Okay. All right. We'll get to it then. In 1950, he joined the Soul Stirrers as their lead singer. He recorded a number of gospel tunes with them. Well, there you go. And he's frequently credited with bringing the attention of a younger audience to gospel music of the time. His first pop single was Lovable, released in 1956. It was a remake of the gospel tune Wonderful. He released it under the name of Dale Cooke, no E. There was considerable stigma against gospel singers performing pop music. However, his voice made him easily recognized.
Okay, so this is a stigma, I think, that still kind of exists in pop music and gospel music now. I mean, think about the kind of flack from both sides that Amy Grant took when she released her pop album.
And it's a tough thing to get over because there's an unfair kind of subconscious, I don't know, judgment, but subconscious feeling like, oh, if I start listening to religious music, it's going to make me religious. And so you kind of just go across your arms, you make the devil sign or something to get away from it. Amy Grant is a good example of that.
Neil Morse, the guy who used to be the lead singer of Spock's Beard, he went from Spock's Beard, became a born-again Christian, and now does hardcore Christian prog.
Oh, wow. Okay, there's a combo.
And,
How does that sit with the prog holes?
See, and that's the thing is, it seems to be doing well. I mean, Mike Portnoy, former drummer for Dream Theater, he's playing with him. He's got an all-star band that tours with him, and his stuff is still super appreciated by the proggies. Huh. But it's still a weird thing to go out and find, Neil Morse's album Testimony and pick it up.
Right. Right. Well, and there's, I'm certainly not a religious person. I'm probably more agnostic than, atheist. But there's an artist named Steve Taylor, who no relation to anybody in Duran Duran, by the way, who, is a Christian artist. But his stuff is so cool and crossovery and such clever writing. I mean, again, it's kind of that, it straddles the line of that almost novelty song, but maybe not quite novelty song. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of his. And it's weird because I feel like if I play some music for somebody, I have to say, now, he's a Christian artist, but he's really, really good. And because I feel like I've got to defend it. And yeah. I don't think there's any, you shouldn't have to defend the music you like, bottom line. But you certainly shouldn't have to defend like, well, this is a Christian artist, but I like it anyway. after a label rep for the Soul Stirrers heard that Cook was covering Gershwin, an argument brought an end to Cook's relationship with that group and the label they were on. So, well, Gershwin, even Gershwin considered a no-no from the gospel community.
But at the time, Gershwin was considered pop music.
Yeah.
And because of the things Gershwin was writing, you know, Porgy and Bess and some of this stuff, it was edgy.
Yeah, right. Totally crazy. Well, let's get into his discography. You and I sat there and we listened to... Now, this is a tougher one because, at least for me, a lot of these albums aren't available streaming, but all the songs are available in different collections. Like, so there's the RCA singles collection or the 1966 collection or things like that, where it's all the songs he released during that time, but not specifically this album. So
one of the collections that I found was called The Man Who Invented Soul. It came out in 2000.
That's a good one.
That's a fantastic collection of music.
It is. And it's like five or six discs. Yeah, uh-huh. Like it's a ton of music.
Yeah.
I think we will link to that one for our Amazon. Cause that's, I mean, that is like, you want Sam Cooke? Here you go. You're going to get not only like all the songs he's known for, but a bunch of other really good stuff. And even some of his gospel stuff, some of his covers. It's a good one to pick up.
So I feel like Sam Cooke has kind of fallen into the category that Patsy Cline did, where everything they did is considered a classic. So steering away from, in our song pick, steering away from the hits was hard because everything was so hitty.
It is, right? You know, and you're hearing it thinking, okay, this probably was released as a single. I know one of the songs that I picked was released as a single, although I don't find it on many greatest hits collections of his, but it's really hard not to choose Cupid. I love that song. Oh, yeah. And it's like, all right, that's a single. I can't do Cupid.
I picked at least one, maybe even more.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll see what we did. All right. 1957, the album Songs by Sam Cooke. Found his first hit on there, You Send Me, classic. It was the B-side of his cover of Gershwin's Summertime. So there you go, one of those taboo songs. Oh my gosh, Summertime.
Yeah, so You Send Me spent 6 weeks at number one on the R&B charts, and it sat at number one on the Billboard chart for 3 weeks. So think of 1957 context and kind of how an accomplishment that was for him to crack over into the regular Billboard chart.
It's huge for an African-American singer, for sure. He also, on that album, covered Old Man River. In 1958, he followed that album up with Encore, which contained the songs My Foolish Heart and When I Fall in Love. There's a standard right there, When I Fall in Love. Yes. That's I don't know who originally did it, but that's one that you hear and you just immediately know.
Mm-hmm. When I fall in love, it will be forever, or I'll never.
When I fall in love. Yeah, anyway. I don't do it as well as he does.
That was the Chris Isaac version of it.
Apparently was, yes. the Barry White version. In 1959, he released Tribute to the Lady, which was a tribute to the music of Billie Holiday, I believe. His backing band on the album was the Renee Hall Orchestra.
I thoroughly enjoyed this album.
Yeah, me too. This is one that is available in completion on at least Apple Music,
it's probably on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Spotify.
Nice. Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, you know, Tomato, Tomato, which is such a fun song hearing him do it, Oysters and Oysters. And for the first time in hearing that song, and I don't think it's because of his version, it's probably because I've never really given it much thought.
I like tomatoes, potatoes, potatoes, tomatoes, tomatoes. Let's call the whole thing off. Call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might
But I understand now, it's like, all right, we have this, we're in a relationship, but you say tomato, I pronounce it tomato. Oh, forget it. We're done. It's over. Mm-hmm. And then we're calling it off. And then it's like, oh, you do this. All right, let's call the calling off off. It's just such a fun song. And I don't know why I never really paid attention to the lyrics before. I for some reason, thought they were calling off like a vegetable garden or something. No, I don't know what it was, but I don't know what I thought they were calling off if it wasn't a relationship, because I really never gave it any thought.
I actually thought they were just calling off the argument, kind of like saying it's no big deal.
But, oh, yeah. See, that's probably, that could be what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. But, and maybe that is, and maybe I'm just, you know, reading more into it than there is. But anyway, can't take that away from me. Mm-hmm. It's so hard not to want to sing those lyrics as I say the names of the songs. In 1960, he released The Wonderful World of Sam Cooke.
Wait, really? We're there already? Wow. Okay.
We're there already. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I know. You want me to slow down?
No. We're fine. I was just like, wow, we're there.
We're there, and we're probably there with like his biggest song, which is Wonderful World, commonly remembered as Don't Know Much About History, and Blue Moon, also on this album. But I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography, don't know much trigonometry. But that is a good example. Like, Wonderful World is a good example of how much we hear his music in movies. Because forever now, I will always associate Wonderful World with Animal House. It's a song from the soundtrack, and there's a I can't even remember the scene that it's in, but there's a performance of his version in that movie. Cupid, I'll always connect with Inner Space. In 1960, he released the album Cook's Tour, which was his first album on RCA. The liner notes called it an adventurous travelogue, that's a quote, that explores various territories around the world.
He did a lot of classic show tune covers, and we've already mentioned a few, Old Man River, sure. Summertime.
Yeah.
And I wish that show tunes were still considered popular music, because I think they're a great place for artists to show their ability to sing straight ahead songs.
Yeah.
There's a song from Hamilton called Waiting.
That is a
song waiting to be picked up by artists and turned into their own versions of that song. It is such a great song.
I'm glad you brought that one up, because I was thinking, all right, well, Hamilton, probably our most popular current musical out there, does it really have any songs that would lend themselves to covers? And you picked the right song, like, yeah. You said, oh yeah, as soon as you said Waiting, it's like,
as soon as I heard it when I was sitting in the theater, I'm like, okay, who can sing this? And I came up with like 10 or 12 people who could cover it and do mm-hmm. really amazing things with it.
Well, we did the, when we did the Spice Girls episode of Soundography, we had that album from Melanie C. from Sporty, mm-hmm. That was all show tunes. And yeah. I thought that was such a great album. So I'm with you. I mean, I wouldn't mind there being more of these. And they don't necessarily have to be quote unquote contemporary show tunes. It doesn't have to be from the Book of Mormon or
Avenue Q.
Avenue Q or anything like that. The SpongeBob SquarePants Broadway.
Yeah,
show,
exactly.
Whatever it is.
Pants on Broadway.
Right. Is that what it's called?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, I love it though, if it is. Anyway, I mean, it could be classic ones, and not necessarily by the same people who always cover that stuff, like Barbra Streisand mm-hmm. or Michael Bublé or people like that. I want to hear, like, I want a Panic at the Disco show tunes album.
Yeah.
Or a
Kanye West. Let's do it.
A Kanye West show tunes album. All right. That might have killed the argument. Well,
After listening to his catalog, I think he could pull it off.
I think he could pull off quite
something,
a few.
Yeah.
Give him some Rodgers and Hammerstein and let him just go to work. By the way, that Cook's Tour, and we kind of alluded to this with the liner notes, but every song on there is from a different nation or city. Mm-hmm. And it feels like one of my mixtapes. Like, it's something that I would do, like, all right, I'm going to do songs about U.S. states, and it's going to be this and that and this. And I love that. I mm-hmm. think it would be really cool. It's too bad One Night in Bangkok wasn't written before this, because then we'd get a cover of that in on this Cook's Tour album.
That would be very interesting.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, Glenn Osser wrote the arrangements and conducted the orchestra for that album. In 1960, he released an album called Hits of the 50s. It's a cover album. Sings songs by Nat King Cole, Frankie Avalon, Doris Day. This was a fun one, too, because these were songs. It's very easy, maybe for our generation, maybe not necessarily for older generations than us, but I think even more so for younger generations. It's really easy to apply the label oldies to like a few different decades and say, oh yeah, those are oldies. You and I, we grew up in the 80s and the 70s. We knew all that stuff and we could separate the 70s from the 80s. Mm-hmm. I had a hard time separating 50s from 60s music.
I don't, depending on genre. Some genres are easier to delineate than others.
Okay. Yeah, see, I think of the Platters and Sam Cooke recording music at the same time, and they're separated by a decade, stuff like that. So very interesting. But I'm wondering if like current millennials or you know the current generation thinks of Limp Bizkit and Pet Shop Boys all came out at the same time, or
I sure hope not. But
I know, but
whatever. I do think it's interesting, though, that what was oldies to us is now history, and what we grew up on is now being played on the oldie station.
Yeah, you find that interesting or just completely soul-crushing? Which do you mean exactly?
I think both, because of my role as a music connoisseur and commentator now.
I'm glad you're able to separate the emotion from that and the wow. That song by Duran Duran is an oldie. Okay. All right.
Actually, I'll never forget the first time I was flipping the oldies channel and heard Metallica on it. I'm like, oh my gosh. Geez. That means they're old, and so am I.
In 1961, he started his own record label, SAR Records, with J.W. Alexander and Roy Crane. He then started a publishing imprint and management group. I'm trying to look at this SAR Records. It's not like they took their initials or anything. Oh, Sam... Arthur. Alexander, yeah, and Roy, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
What's interesting about this was a brilliant move on his part to protect himself and his musical creations, because he owned all of it now. And it was a really brilliant move on his part to keep things under his control.
And this is 4 years before the Beatles and later on Apple Records. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if this was as pioneering as it feels like to me, especially for 1960, were there a lot of artists at that time who were creating their own, like starting their own labels rather than being trapped on a label that was dictating the kind of music they had to release? And
I'm thinking that more, there were a few that were doing it, but I think that they probably were all, you know, white guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Sam was able to pull this off with a business maneuver like this in this time, day and age, or that time and era as an African American male, is again quite a feat and it's amazing. An accomplishment. Yeah,
for sure. The early 60s for Sam Cooke were populated with a long string of hits, Chain Gang, which reached number 2 on the pop charts.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they work so hard.
And then more hits with Sad Mood, Cupid, Bring It On Home to Me, which had Lou Rawls on backing vocals. Yeah, didn't know that.
Cool. How about that? Hey, Lou, I know you're a big deal. Why don't you come sing backup for me?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, kind of like Rockwell. Hey, Michael, I know you're a big deal. Come sing backup.
Well, Michael Jackson was a lot bigger at the time when Rockwell.
I know.
But I mean, this is like, you know, again, 1960 Lou Rawls. I don't think he'd made much of an impact, been much of a blip on the radar for people until the 70s.
But his voice, though, is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine that recording, just the two voices? It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Because, Sam Cooke in a little bit higher register, Lou Rawls, of course, nice, bassy. bassy tone. 1961, the album Swing Low, which contained the aforementioned Chain Gang, which was a really big hit for him. He focused on singles like a lot of artists did at the time. And I think that's why so many of these are compilations. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that it's, you know, here's this single and these other six singles and maybe the B-sides. Let's all just put that on an album after we sell all the singles. And then people buy the ones they don't have by buying that album.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and they're just pooping out singles every few weeks.
That's right. Also that year, 1961, My Kind of Blues, another cover album with a lot of great stuff on there. 1962, Twistin' the Night Away, which of course had that big song for him, Twistin' the Night Away, but also kind of capitalizing on the whole twist phenomenon. Twistin' the night away. Here's a man in evening clothes. How he got here, I don't know, but man, you ought to see him go. Twistin' the night away. He's dancing with the chicken slacks. She's moving up and back. I'll let you talk about it, but it resulted in this being one of his best-selling albums.
Yeah, so 5 of the 12 songs on this album had the word twist in the title.
It is funny because, I mean, that kind of happened to Chubby Checker, too, because he did the original song, you know, The Twist, mm-hmm. and then the label said, oh, you're going to release another one called Let's Twist Again. Mm-hmm. And then...
Still Twistin'. And I know what you twisted last summer.
Exactly. But yeah, Twistin' the Night Away, Twistin' in the Kitchen, The Twist. He does a cover of the Chubby Checker one. Twistin' in the Old Town, Camptown Twist.
Countdown Twisting, do this.
Exactly.
So would this,
you also have, yeah.
Would this be considered a concept album?
Oh, that's a funny thought. I mean, yeah, the through line. it's a story of a guy who doesn't know how to twist.
And there's a twist at the end.
There's a twist at the end. Well done. Oh my gosh. How, M. Night Shyamalan just loved that concept album. Well done, sir. All right. Oh, it's funny. I almost went back to Swing Low because I saw my notes. I was like, is that all a swing album? Mr. Soul, the album, released in 1963. And the same year, Nightbeat, which was well received by critics and listeners alike.
Yeah, this was an incredibly heavily blues-influenced album. And I really liked it because, I mean, I'm a big, as much as I like metal and show tunes and prog rock, I'm at heart, I'm a blues guy. I mean, I love old school Chicago blues and New Orleans blues and Southern blues, all that stuff. And this was a fantastic album.
It was really good. And Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen on there, like a really good cover. Little Red Rooster I almost included in my list.
The dogs begin to bark. The hounds begin to howl. The dogs begin to bark.
Shake, Rattle, and Roll. But a lot of stuff that he wrote as well on here. Mean Old World is one of his. Laughing and Clowning. You Gotta Move, all written by him, or co-written by him at least. So he wasn't just a performer of other people's music. 1964, he released Ain't That Good News, which was his most critically acclaimed album. It contained 5 singles, and this sadly would be the last album that would be released while he was alive.
And just to add tragedy to this was recorded just months after his 18-month-old had drowned.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's depressing. Mm-hmm. Jeez. Wow. Each side, by the way, of the album had a different feel. One was soul influenced and the other one is mellower and more filled with ballads. So that year, 1964, at the age of 33, he was shot and killed by Bertha Franklin, who was a hotel manager of the Hacienda Hotel in Los Angeles. His death was ruled as justifiable homicide, but his family has since called those findings into question. Now, you and I have both kind of looked at the story behind it and the kind of the mystery about it. I mean, geez, what a horrible way to go. He died with a sport coat and a shoe, wearing only a sport coat and a shoe, busted in on the office of this hotel, as far as Bertha Franklin claims, demanding she tell him where the woman that he came to the hotel with had gone. Mm-hmm. And $4,000 in cash had been stolen. The woman in question turned out to be a prostitute, and Bertha Franklin turned out also to be a former madam, possibly the madam of the prostitute. So the two of them could have been working in cahoots with each other as a robbery.
Yeah. And then there's the woman who was on the phone who heard, quote unquote, heard the whole thing go down, and right. was actually one of the like solidifying witnesses. And the woman that had escaped or gotten away or left him, however you want to phrase it, had called the cops just before all of this went down, saying that she'd escaped from him. So
right.
it all seems super convenient, but at the same time, when you back up and look at it, it seems like, okay, if you're going to – how would you get a guy to break into an office wearing only a sport coat and a shoe?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the one question that I can't kind of conspiracy theory an answer to.
Right. Nope. Totally. There's so much mystery around that I want to know more, and I don't think we'll ever find out more, obviously.
Yeah. For those of you who are curious, all this information is just a Google click away, because the crime scene photos, courtroom photos, all that stuff is out there, and you can do all your own research too.
Yeah, and you'll find that picture of Bertha Franklin, the only picture I've seen of Bertha Franklin, where she just looks like arms folded, big old smile on her face. Obviously not a mugshot. A police photo.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but anyway.
That's the employee of the month photo from La Hacienda Hotel.
From La Hacienda? Yeah, no kidding. I think we need to – there's got to be like a dateline or a cold case show or something that's done an expose. I'm sure there's a VH1 Behind the Music that talks about it. Anyway, at his second funeral service, which was in LA, Ray Charles performed the song "The Angels Keep Watching Over Me."
So he had two services. One was, I think, in Chicago, and then they transported him to LA. He had a second service, and he was interred there in California.
Oh wow! Okay. I wonder if I saw his grave, because we were out looking at, I know it sounds morbid, but Tina loves going to cemeteries for some reason and looking at unusual gravestones. And I wonder if we saw Sam Cooke's, because I'll bet he's in kind of one of the a mausoleum. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet there's like a plaque or something. I'll have to look back and see if we saw him. After his death, two singles were released. Shake was a big pop hit for him. And then the B-side, A Change Is Gonna Come, is now considered a classic protest song. It's actually become one of his biggest songs, one of his most well-known songs, because of so much use, certainly recently and probably at the time as well.
Oh, I think everybody at some point in the 60s played this song.
Yeah.
And I think it's coming back into vogue now. With a fervor that has not been seen since it was originally released.
For sure. In 1964, Sam Cooke at the Copa was released. It was a posthumously released live album. I love this album, actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't really realize that it was released after he died, but man, you listen to this and the interactions he's got with the audience, and it's such a fun live album, and it sounds so good. He's got the audience singing along with him for some songs. This is a good one to put on Apple Music or Spotify or whatever if you want to hear some of his singles. But he also does covers like "If I Had a Hammer" and stuff like that. Definitely worth checking out. It's really good. And then 1985, very posthumous release, live at the Harlem Square Club, 1963. At the time, this was seemed to be raw and gritty, and not released out of worries of damaging his image.
And but, it's funny that was a concern then. It goes back to kind of the way the Hollywood studios dealt with their actors and tried to squash the things that made them seem immoral and unscrupulous and stuff like that. But after listening to this album, there was really nothing shocking. He just was performing in Harlem.
Yeah. It's really good, I think.
And this album is listed as one of the 500 greatest of all time by Rolling Stone.
So there you go. Good one to listen to. And maybe it is that rawness, that grittiness that makes it so good. Yeah. I don't know. But it's cool. A lot of good live albums to check out with them.
It's a good thing Kiss didn't worry about that, because Alive 2 would never have been released.
Right? Yeah, exactly. All right. Tell us some statistics and general notes about Sam Cooke.
In 1986, he was inducted as a charter member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. In 1987, he was entered into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. In 1994, he received a star on the Walk of Fame. So I have a hard time saying received, because now I understand that you get the opportunity and then you have to pay for your star.
Yeah,
so but it doesn't seem as such an accolade anymore.
Well, it's here's what it is, because it's not just, you know, you're buying a star, you're paying for annual upkeep. I mean, basically, I think it becomes your property, like you're, you know, your little plot of land. And even though they take care of the upkeep and making sure that there's no gum stuck on it or anything like that, vandalism, somebody has to pay for that. And it's, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame committee, I don't think is like considered a nonprofit that can collect payments some other way. So I think they need to have this to like be able to afford the upkeep of all these stars.
You mean the Walk of Fame is not a 501c?
It's not a 501c, no. But I mean, they're not going to ask me if, you know, they're not going to say, yeah, if you've got the money, Brian, you can have a star here too. It's, you do have to earn the right to get it, but yeah, you do have to pay for that privilege as well.
2004, Rolling Stone listed him as number 16 on the list of 100 greatest of all time. In 2008, he was listed as the fourth greatest singer of all time by Rolling Stone.
Okay, makes sense.
In 2011, Chicago renamed a section of street after him. In 2013, he was inducted into the Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame. Between 57 and 1964, he had 30 top 40 hits, plus three more after he passed away. And then, of course, he was active in the civil rights movement at the time, which seems obvious not by just what he was able to do with his career, but with even like a change is going to come. Mm-hmm. He also founded, like we said, he founded a record label and publishing company as part of his career as a singer and composer.
Very cool, which is huge, mm-hmm. I think.
Yep.
All right. So let's say you were able to go to see him perform at the Copa or see one of these the great performances that he has. What song are you pretty much guaranteed that you're going to be hearing him perform in concert? And you and I actually maybe disagree on this one.
Yeah. So my list of songs are You Send Me, Cupid, Chain Gang, Wonderful World, and Twist in the Night Away.
Heart for me. Now, I don't mean to bother you, but I'm in distress. There's danger.
My pick is Wonderful World.
Yeah. And I said Twistin' the Night Away. It just feels like if he was opening for another band and got the chance to do four songs, although by that time he wasn't opening for anybody.
Yeah.
And also this was a song that was later. I mean, I think I might be retracting my suggestion on this one, but felt like it's a good upbeat one that he'd always try and perform. But
I mean, other thoughts though, You Send Me seems to, I mean, it's his early. It's one of his first singles.
It's his first hit.
Yep. And also Summertime, because it was a hit. It was a B-side of his first hit. So both of those stand just as good of a chance as any others.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think Summertime is on either of the two live albums that we listened to this week. Or were they? Were they? And I just forgot about it.
I'll be honest with you. I can't remember. It was all kind of a blur.
Okay. Now, this is not a great list. I'm just going to say that right now. It lists 85 tours. This can't be right. Tour statistics, song statistics. Tour statistics lists Twist in the Night Away as number one, but there it's listed as two plays, and there's an 84-way tie, or not an 84-way tie, but there's a, you know, a 30-song tie for second place, even though it lists five different tours for 1964. See, this seems weird. Let me see what we've got here. Oh, it's because the only performances. Yeah, this is a tough one because they've gotten their listing from stuff like Sam Cooke at the Copa and the Harlem. I think actually specifically that's where they got all this stuff.
I think we had the same problem with Patsy Cline, to be honest with you, where we couldn't get an accurate read on anything.
Yeah. Oh, this is a bummer because I was really curious to see.
We are both right. Let's call the whole thing.
You say it's this song and I say it's that song. Anyway. All right. Well, that's a bummer. I would have liked to have known that. Setlist.fm, you've let us down, man.
But is that, that's one of those, that's like Wikipedia where it's crowdsourced, right?
It absolutely is.
Yeah. So let's blame the internet at large.
Sure. If you went to one of those early concerts and you wrote down the songs you performed, go get on setlist.fm and put that information on there so people can, people like us can get accurate details. Gosh. I'm sure there's nobody out there listening to our voices who attended a Sam Cooke concert in the 50s or 60s and wrote down the set list, but you never know. All right, let's go to a section where we talk about who we'd like to hear them cover, but we're changing it up a little. Although if I did think about this, like if he were still alive today, I would have loved to have heard him cover Little Lion Man by Mumford and Sons.
I'd like to hear him cover Waiting from Hamilton.
Oh, nice callback. Kevin, well done. Anyway, all right. He'd never do Little Lion Man because of the F-bomb in there, but I think it would be great. It'd be right in his range, and it'd be so cool to hear him sing it. But what we do is when the artist is has passed away, we flip it on its ear.
Oh,
and
we did it with Leonard Cohen, and he wasn't dead at the time.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Where we pick, who we'd like to hear cover them. I'll go first. I'd like to hear Bring It On Home to Me covered by Counting Crows. This feels like a song that, any Sam Cooke feels like it's right in Adam Duritz's voice range, vocal range. And in the last few albums, the Crows have been doing some really cool stuff with harmonies, especially their Underwater Sunshine album, which was all covers. They do some great, great harmonies on there. And I think Bring It On Home to Me would just lend itself to some of those harmonies. I'd love to hear them do Bring It On Home to Me. How about you?
So I was going to say this first. If the Black Crows went on tour with Counting Crows, it could actually be the Murder of Crows tour.
Right. And is there like a third? Can we give it a hat trick? Somebody last name Crow? Well, no, I'm trying to think. Jim Crow. She.
Mine's a little bit different. I went A Change Is Gonna Come, and I want Living Color to do it. I really think as soon as I saw that he had done A Change Is Gonna Come, mm-hmm. the perfect band to do it would be a smart kind of funky band like Living Color. Yeah. And I think they would do, I think Cult of Personality kind of take on it, and I think it would be a really good.
I think that would be, and I like that a lot. The as soon as I saw you wrote that, I had to jump into my library and see, because for some reason it sounded like, wait a minute, didn't they do that cover?
I had to look too to make sure it hadn't actually happened already.
And you know what I was confusing it with?
Huh.
Terrence Trent D'Arby did a cover of A Change Is Gonna Come, and I think his vocal style is very similar to, I can't remember the lead singer of Living Color.
I can't think of his name off the top of my head either. I was actually looking through my rock cards last night. I have a collection of, like baseball cards, except with heavy metal with and rock stars on it. Yeah.
Awesome.
Because that's the guy I am.
Right. Did they come with a stick of bubble gum or a lighter?
No, they came with these cool stickers.
Oh, that's cool.
Like Iron Maiden cover stickers and Pusshead art and stuff like that.
Wow, that's kind of cool, actually. Huh. Now we get to the point on this show where we do our playlists. We pick five songs, maybe steering away from greatest hits. We tried to anyway. May have picked one or two. We'll see. But stuff that if you compile that with another greatest hits album, we like to say that you'll get a good variety of the music from that artist.
Mm-hmm.
My first one is that song we talked about that seemed to be released at such a bad time in his life. Ain't That Good News? Now, there was a version that was included on an album called Les Paul and Friends, American Made, World Played. And it's an album that certainly came out years after Sam Cooke's death. Jeff Beck plays a Les Paul guitar. Maybe Les Paul even appears on this album. But Jeff Beck does some guitar work on top of the song.
Telling me that she was on her way, and she wanted me to meet her at the station. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. In the letter, she told me she still loved me. Ain't that good news, man,
and
ain't that news.
Normally I don't like stuff like this. I didn't like it when Natalie Cole re-recorded Unforgettable with Nat King Cole's vocals,
mm-hmm.
or added her vocals to it. Normally I don't like that sort of thing. For this one though, I feel like it's a really, really cool way to pay homage to the original. And I gotta say, it turned me around on that one for sure. Second one comes from that Sam Cooke at the Copa release. It is a medley of Try a Little Tenderness, Sentimental Reasons, and You Send Me.
You were meant for me. Tell her, darling, give your loving heart to me. Tell me we'll never, 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 never part. And also you have to tell her, darling, you.
And the three songs, and Try a Little Tenderness, I mean, that's a Otis Redding track that, again, an artist that I kind of put in the same collection as Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing him do a cover of that, and even the banter that goes along with it, he introduces it like, you know, sometimes you're with a woman for a long time and you kind of get fall into a rut. And it's just great hearing him like do this stage banter while the band is kind of setting up the arrangement of the song. I love that.
Okay,
and that's a really, really good version.
Before you go into the next couple things,
yes,
on Spotify, At the Copa is there, but I think because I have a free account, it's not, I don't have the licensing for it. So
okay.
I couldn't add it to the playlist, and I could not find the Jeff Beck version of Ain't That Good News on Spotify.
Okay.
So I just put the original on there.
The next one is a song called Baby, 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 not to be confused with the Amy Grant song, Baby, Baby, or the Justin Bieber song called Baby.
I wake up calling out your name. Yeah. Oh, you got me so unhappy. And honey, you're the one to blame. Let me tell you about
it. this one is three times as good as that. It was released as a single in 1962. I couldn't find an album that it originated on. So this is one of those songs that was released as a single and then added to compilations, mm-hmm. and stuff like that afterwards. It sounds like it was recorded in the same session as Chain Gang, because the backing vocalists sound very similar, but it feels so different from his other pop hits. It feels like it's a much older style of writing. I mean, this could have been a 50s song that he covered. And there's this high-pitched female vocalist in the chorus that just makes the song so killer for me. It's the part I love the most about it. Next one comes from the Swing Low album, and it's a song called Grandfather's Clock.
Now it was bought on the morn of the day that he was born, and was always his treasure and pride. But it stopped short.
And it begins with a metronome and this kind of slow build. And then it goes into like this more orchestrated more instrument, more, you know, featuring more instruments in the latter part of the song, reminds me a lot of Mack the Knife. Mm-hmm. And that might have been their intention, because that's, you know, probably would have been around the time that Bobby Darin was having a big hit with that. And this feels a little bit like that. Also, it's an upbeat song about a darker lyric. I mean, he's talking about this grandfather clock that, or his grandfather's clock that was so big you couldn't put on a shelf. Sounds to me like a grandfather clock. And the thing stopped working the minute that his grandfather died. It's like, okay, that's dark, but you're singing it in a major, a major key. So I guess I'm happy about it. I don't know. I'm so confused. That's really good. So that's another one.
As far as the Posies haven't covered that yet.
Who hasn't covered it?
The Posies.
Right. See, that'd be a great one for them. And then the last one is the coffee song. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. Of course, this comes from that album with all the different countries and cities on it, Cook's Tour.
You can't get cherry soda, 'cause they've got to sell their quota. And the way things are, I guess they never will. They've got a zillion tons of coffee in Brazil. No tea.
And this is, I love that whole album, and I love the concept of that whole album. But this isn't even, this is kind of the gem of this album for me. I love the song because it's all these stories about people getting arrested because they drank water and it wasn't coffee in Brazil. And I love stuff like that. So that's my list of five songs.
That reminds me of that episode of The Simpsons where they go to Australia and Marge is trying to order sodas or water.
I'll just have a cup of coffee.
Beer it is.
No, I said coffee.
Beer.
Coffee.
Beer.
C-O.
B-A.
Water. They go beer.
No water. You mean beer water?
Yeah. All right. I start off with a hit. And I'm pretty sure I don't care.
Yeah.
It's his cover of Summertime.
And your ma is good looking. So hush, little baby. Don't you cry.
From songs of Sam Cooke. I love this song. I've loved this song for a long time. I like a lot of different versions of it. I think Me First and the Gimme Gimmes did a good version of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are good versions floating around all over the place. This one captures that kind of lazy, hot Southern summer feel, though.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably one of my favorite versions of it because of that. It's slow. It's plodding. He takes his time with each word. He takes his time with each lyric and phrase. And it feels like you're sitting on a porch with some Country Time lemonade, listening to a guy sing it.
Like we're enjoying like powdered lemonade. It's not even fresh lemonade.
I was just thinking of the ad.
Oh,
but
I guess that is good old fashioned lemonade. Yeah. They tell us that in the commercial.
Yeah, they say it. But that's the thing that I keep thinking when I listen to his version of it. I think it's one of the textbook versions of the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Then the next one I picked is God Bless the Child. It's on Tribute to the Lady.
But God bless the child that's got his own. That's got his own. When you've got money, you've got lots of friends.
This has been and will continue to be one of my favorite songs of all time. The backup singers really date this, though. If they could remove the backup singers from the mix, I think it would be able to be revitalized because it's very much of its time with the style of backup singing that it has.
Okay, George Lucas, get right on that.
And yes, for those of you who are wondering, this is the song that Lisa popularized on Lisa Sings the Blues.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Her version's really good, too. And at times you can tell it's a grown woman singing because she can't stay in character when she's hitting some of those notes.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's funny. Oh, poor Yeardley Smith.
Yeah. The next one I picked is The Song Is Ended from My Kind of Blues.
And the melody seemed to say, oh, summer will pass away. Take your happiness while you may. There neath the light of the moon, we sang a love song.
This arrangement is smooth. It's like a big band version, kind of like a Sinatra feel to it. Mm. But then he sings and it sounds kind of happy about the song being over, kind of metaphorically speaking. Mm. And it's just a great big band tune. It's got all the hallmarks and trademarks of, you know, you expect from big band, except he's got it's just a killer voice going over the top of it.
Oh, wow. Cool.
The next one I picked was Driftin' Blues from Mr. Soul.
No, I'm drifting, drifting, drifting like a ship out on the sea. No, I ain't got no.
This is a really basic blues song, but again, his voice makes it stand out as something unique and special and different. And his vocal delivery is, I mean, it's so him that, I mean, I've spent a week listening to it now. I can pick out Sam Cooke vocals in almost anything now because it's so distinctive.
Really, totally is. Yeah, like slightly gruff, like a little slight hard edge, serrated edge to it, but mm-hmm. smooth. I told Tina, I wonder if Sam Cooke is one of those artists that have perfect pitch. This sure seems like it.
He might, especially with all the composing and arranging he did.
Mm-hmm.
He might just it might be part of his DNA to spit out music.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, is his voice really, it takes songs that could be kind of commonplace and forgettable and elevates mm-hmm. them to another place just because of his vocal delivery.
Yeah.
And the last song I had is That's It, I Quit from Twist of the Night. This is a man complaining about a relationship that's falling apart.
That's it, I quit, I'm moving on. Yeah, the other night we had a date. You showed up 2 hours late. Though your hair was all in place, somebody smeared the lipstick on your face.
Mm-hmm. It's a blues tune. It's a classic blues topic, relationships falling apart. But it's a fun one because he's pointing out all the things that happen in relationships that, if you're not paying attention, will happen.
Right.
And he does a great job with it. I really enjoyed this piece of music.
And it's fun, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's surprisingly fun.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's a weird topic to be considered fun.
But it is.
It's kind of like there's a song by Little Charlie and the Nightcats called My Next Ex-Wife. And it's,
I love the title yeah. already.
And it's very similar to that in the fact that, yes, it's kind of sad stuff, but he's talking to his next ex-wife.
It's great. Yeah. It's, I like, you know, it's like, let's call the whole thing off. It's got mm-hmm. that kind of like comedy, breakup songs.
Yeah. I really think that, his love of show tunes and theater, had affected how he presents topics of songs.
Mm, yeah.
Because he covered a bunch of old standards, so it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Cool. Very good. Nice one. This was a fun week. I really enjoyed kind of the mellowness of this, like listening to his music. The whole week mellowed me out. Which I think I needed after Third Eye Blind and even Sparks. I feel like I needed some, I don't know, comfort food.
Yeah, Sparks was super frenetic. It wasn't painful That's in right. any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But the jarring changes in their career and the frenetic nature of many, many, many of the songs kind of takes a toll on you after a week.
Yeah, it does. You're ready for you're ready to just sit back with a cup of decaf and just enjoy the meal you just had.
Cup of Country Time lemonade on the porch.
A cup of Country Time, glass of Country Time lemonade. Yep. Jeez. How about a Bartles and James wine cooler while we're at commercials with drinks on the porch?
They thank you for your support.
Oh my God. Good memory. I'd completely forgotten that was the slogan for those. Crazy.
Speaking of calming and soothing.
Yes. Who is our next episode, Hammond?
It's the Dead Milkman.
Oh, good. Wow. When I think calm and soothing music, Dead Milkmen are the first band that comes to mind. Wow. All right. Well, that's going to be quite a jump from Sam Cooke.
I love the Dead Milkmen. There's one album in particular that I listen to from front to start at least once a month.
Cool. Still. Well, I'm excited because I don't know. I think I know. God, what songs do I know? Did they do Punk Rock Girl? I know.
Bitchin' Camaro.
And Bitchin' Camaro, Instant Club Hit.
Which we're going to have to talk about because that's got lyrical content that isn't acceptable in this day and age.
Oh, right. Yes, you're an art.
Yeah, art person.
Art person. Lover of art. Okay.
But they also just recently released a song with MC Lars.
Okay.
Where they're talking about The Raven. Just not that long ago.
Really? The Edgar Allan Poe thing?
Yeah.
Thing. Edgar Allan Poe story. Thing.
Poem.
Poem. Yeah, I can't believe that they've released stuff as recently as 2011, or when was Pretty Music for Pretty People released? This looks like it was even more recently released. Wow. Okay. Oh, I'm excited for this. This is going to be fun because I don't know a lot of Dead Milkmen. It feels like we've certainly this season, between Sparks, Oingo Boingo, and the Dead Milkmen, we've had a lot of artists with kind of tongue-in-cheek humor.
Mm-hmm. That and Prague.
And then Prague. This has been the season of Prague and tongue-in-cheek novelty bands or humor bands. That's fine. I'm totally fine with that. Hey, if you want to suggest that there might be other types of music out there, please email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Soundography. Our website is soundography.com. You can check out our playlist on every episode that you'll find at soundography.com. We link the Spotify playlist for every song that we can find that's in our playlist. You know, obviously there are going to be some that aren't available. Nothing we can do about that. Sorry, licensing. But the ones that are available, you'll find in a link in every episode of the show. You'll also find a link to Amazon where you can buy the music we recommend. We'll definitely be linking to that, the man who invented soul music. And you'll find a link to our Patreon. If you want to support the show, even if it's with like a buck or two a month, please do. You can definitely do that. And you'll get cool goodies in the process. We're in the process right now of getting some stuff printed to send out to everybody next month. So keep an eye out for that. And if you still haven't gotten anything, I'm going to bundle. There's a few people who are waiting for stuff. I'm just going to wait and bundle it all together for people who haven't received the last quarter shipment or the last sectional shipment. So
yeah.
So stay around for that. Hey, we also like seeing your reviews. Go to iTunes, leave us a review. It's how people discover shows and they can get more information. Unless you're going to leave us a bad review, in which case, why are you still listening to my voice? But leave us a review wherever you find quality podcasts like iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and all that stuff. Of course, you can always tweet about how much you love the show.
Shall we bring up the two things that are going on?
The two things that are going on.
The podcast awards.
Oh, yes. Bring those up. Let's talk about those.
Yeah. So if you go to podcastawards.com, there's a fan nomination thing going on in there. If you click, you have to create an account because they're only doing one vote per email this year. Cool. Brian knows nothing about why.
I know nothing about why that could possibly be a thing. Actually, and I had nothing to do with why that is
no,
a thing.
I know.
Let me just say that. They used my image because my hat was such a memorable accessory.
That entire award ceremony was a memorable accessory. Because if your name wasn't Brian, you weren't winning.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And try not to let the fact that the category is named after me sway you in any way towards recommending Soundography.
But I'll throw this in there too. Be on the Playlist is up in culture. So if you want to do that, that would be awesome. But go do that. Also, the streamies are a thing. And they have an area for podcasts as well. And there's a fan nomination in the streamies. And if you want to nominate Soundography for a Streamy, that would be awesome as well.
I looked at the Streamy's website, and it's funny how it goes from Neil Patrick Harris, oh, cool, to Felicia Day, oh, cool, to Rhett and Link, oh, cool. And then, like, three people that I would slam the door on if they rang my doorbell. Because they look like, well, all right, you know, it's a generalization of YouTube. Hey, everybody, thanks for clicking. Hey, YouTube, what's up? Kind of thing. Click and subscribe. But it is, I'm getting old. I know. Well, I'll admit it.
It's shifting credibility based on age.
It really is. And it's undeserved because I'm sure these people are all wonderful and nice in
hardworking internet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, hey, I can't begrudge somebody doing this and trying to make a living out of it because I'm trying to do the same thing. So, you know. So quit being such a snob, Brian. I hear you all saying that, and fine, I deserve that.
But as a reminder, podcastawards.com, streamings.com, the fan submissions.
Right. Yes, all of these things are good. Very good. Well, I think that's going to do it. So on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying thank you for listening. We're going to see you here next time for the next episode of Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.